Are you H to K-E-A-W-U-O?
K-E-A-W-U-O. Still out there, anything?
No, a second ago I was in statewide 2 by accident, but yeah, I'm back over here. How disappointing. I thought I would, I had my external antenna on my car and got a P25. I'll have to try it again later or see if I have a bad connection in that antenna or something like that.
Yeah, I, you know how I feel about connecting an external antenna to an ATX. I would argue the risk versus the reward isn't quite there. it cost me like $600 to fix mine. But yeah, I don't know. That is a shame, you know, it's frustrating and disheartening and, you know, everything in between, but yeah, I don't know, that's kind of where the mobiles come in, if you can track down a decent, you know, used P25 mobile with a little bit more power, that really helps, but yeah, I don't know, I'll save you the lesson. But yeah, I'm sorry to hear that you're struggling. K-E-A-W-U-O.
We'll get it figured out sooner or later, I'm sure. I just want to, I don't want to get too attached to any one thing, otherwise I'll end up doing what Wally did and having some wildly expensive mobile unit and just have it all moved, which wouldn't be terrible. And it would be fun, but I would like to keep a little bit of that in my pocket. K-E-A-R-U-H.
Yeah, you know what they say, though? You can't bring your money with you when you die, but you can bring your ATX. So that's what I would do.
Good grief.
Like the saying, how's it going, Eric?
Yeah, it's going good. How's it going? I was going to keep that up. It's like, I just had this mental image of a guy in a coffin with a radio on his chest. You know, it's just, oh, terrible.
Well, there's one way to stay in touch in the afterlife.
Well, I've seen people buried in cars, buried on a motorcycle. So, yeah, why not? There has to be some ham somewhere that got buried with his equipment. Yeah, this has to be. W-A-E-A-P.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. There's somebody out there somewhere that's got a fancy icon in their casket with them or something. So that's
Thank you, guys. So I'll catch up with you later. K-E-R-U-H.
All right. Have a good one, Anthony. Nice to talk with you, Eric. You guys have a good one. I'll be clear with monitoring.
Hey, quick question. What P25 repeater? Are you talking about the one in Warren? Or is there more in this area?
I'm probably the more knowledge base than me, but there is some, Central Michigan has some PHF linked P25 repeaters.
Not around. I don't think there's any VHF repeaters around here that are linked. They're probably up north, right?
No, I just want to make sure I have the repeater here. All right. Sounds like I do. Yeah, if you go to WHCMN.net, that's Whiskey 8 Charlie Mike November.net. There's a P25 section, and actually it's like probably one of the, you know, most informative websites out there for statewide related resources and just good information about state infrastructure. And on that page, they list all of the T25 repeaters. And you can see that it's actually kind of a little bit more focused on southeast Michigan or eastern Michigan. There is a little repeater, looks like, in Grand Rapids area as well. But yeah, I would just go over to WHCMN.net, click on the P25 tab, and take a look at that. They are all linked, so if you can get into one, you're getting into them all. And you might notice there's not an output on some, but there is an input. And basically, you know, they might not all transmit, but they do all receive. So you can get in Mount Clemens, and you're broadcast out over Detroit and Southgate and Bay City and Clio and Novi and all over the place, is roughly my understanding of it. But yeah, there's a decent little network down here. I'm not sure where you're at.
Yeah, I'm in Shelby Township. Yeah, I'm aware of the website. I've been to the website several times. I just never clicked on the P25, but I did that while you were talking there. I see what you are saying. The LPS repeater I'm familiar with. Okay, the other ones are far away, around 900 megahertz. So that answers that question. So yeah, the closest ones in Mount Clemens.
Yeah, there is the Warren site in here. It's on UHF, so you might not. You did mention that you knew about the Warren one, so I assume you did. That one is UHF. But yeah, I'm in Shelby Township right now, inside of a shop at 23 and Shaner, and I can get into P25 and DMR from my office. So depending on where you are in Shelby Township, it can be a little tricky. With an HT, with a mobile, you're golden, but with an HT, you know, you might do risky things like Anthony's doing with an external antenna to a handheld APX. But yeah, I don't know if you have a P25 radio, but it does cover a bit of Shelby Township.
Yeah, I'm over here around, I guess, the nearest crossroads would be M59 and Mound, and I got about 50. I got 53 walkie-talkies if you count the POC. Push to talk over cellular, yeah, like 53. But a couple mobiles and a couple DMR mobiles and a couple, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 DMR handhelds, but no P25. But I will try the Mount Clemens. And I can get into mostly everything from here. I'm on a second story of a condo. I don't know if that helps. But on the balcony, I even got a little 2-watt radio, the infamous blue radio. I don't know if you've heard or seen those. They're a little radio they have for $13 on Amazon, a little 2-watt DMR radio. It actually works really, really well, a little built-in antenna. But I can get into that. I can get into Mount Clemens repeater, DMR repeater, no problem with that, if I'm standing on my balcony.
Gotcha. Well, that's pretty sweet. That's actually a really good spot in Shelby Township. If you're at M59 and Mound Road area, second story, I would have to assume that you could probably get in pretty well. Most likely into Warren on P25, but you'd probably get in pretty good either Mount Clemens or even Detroit, because it's got a good height to it, and with you being kind of up in the air, I think you might make the trip fairly well, especially Shelby Township. Well, I mean, I guess you're not quite that high up yet, but Shelby Township tends to have a slightly higher elevation in the surrounding area, so that sometimes helps some dirts, but yeah, you've got a lot of radios. It sounds like the one, the one Pokemon you still need is the P25. Yeah, I know. I can get a used one on eBay and probably get a new faceplate from Sean. I've heard all that, you know. I've seen and heard that for the last, I don't know, 5-6 years. Some people buy them on eBay, and maybe not from Sean. I don't want to throw his name out there for all the faceplates, but I think people can order brand new faceplates on eBay as well. Make them look new, because generally you'll get one in pretty beat up shape for a couple $100, but yep, that's what I do not have.
Gotcha. Yeah, I tend to go to WizCom for the faceplates. I actually for both my APSs, and I like WizCom over eBay because then I know it's an authentic, more roll apart, because that's kind of important to me anyway. I don't want some knockoff, front panel on the APX, so I try to speak out, because you can get them for like $12, just about from Amazon and eBay. It's fairly cheap, but the stuff you get from WizCom is a little bit more expensive, but it's authentic. But yeah, you're not wrong. I probably wouldn't bother Sean with that if you can avoid it. But it's definitely a good thing to do. You're right. So you can definitely get something. It depends on what you want it for. eBay maybe not the best idea if you ever want it provisioned. You kind of want something with tags and all that fun stuff. So getting kind of something new is probably, and it just depends on what you want to use it for. If you just want to get on D25 conventional, then sure, I'm sure eBay would be fine. So.
W8 EAP, yeah. Well, that was just an example, but sounds like what you mentioned there might be a better choice there. But I don't know, just to say I have one, I guess. I mean, I don't have a Fusion radio reader. Sorry about that. I got tongue twisted there. I don't have a Fusion or D-Star radio either.
Yeah, same. I haven't messed with Fusion or D-Star, so I guess there's a few Pokemon that we both need to acquire. I don't know. I really enjoy the DMR and the P25. DMR is pretty cool just because of the whole statewide, ish coverage and how well it just kind of works. And P25 just sounds amazing, and it's pretty cool. They're both great systems. So, very cool.
Yeah, for DMR, got the Anytones, got the Redivis RT3S, DM701, and actually, believe it or not, that new DM32 is actually a really good DMR radio for the price. I mean, it's a little too big to carry around all the time. Much better like the RT3S or the Anytones 878 or 890. But that DM32 has the Motorola looks, but it's a pretty big brick of a radio. Probably know what I'm talking about, but it actually works really, really well. I'm talking on an MD9600 right now. But, I'll look up that website you mentioned and see what they got, Got a little bit of money burning a hole in my pocket. Anyhow, that's about lunchtime here, and the boss just coming back with some subs from Holiday. I'm sure familiar with Holiday pizza and subs, but nice talking to you. Yeah, have a good one out there. Anthony, if you're out there listening, have a good one. W8EAP.
Alrighty. Well, 73 is good talking to you. Enjoy your food. Plus, it sounds delicious right now. I might have to skate out of here and go get some food myself. So, this is KE8WUO. I'll be clear but monitoring.
KE8UIH.
Hey, Billy.
NADBL Mole. Dakota, how you doing, young man? Better now that it's the weekend. How about you?
Yeah, I gotta say better now that it warmed up a little bit anyway. 60s is all right. I was freezing this morning. Darn near got frostbite on the old fingers feeding the cats.
Yeah, it was a little brisk this morning. My truck's saying 68, but I don't know how accurate that is.
You got anything fun planned for the weekend?
No, not really. I think I'm going to build a couple antennas and maybe fly some drones and whatnot. But other than that, Mother's Day Sunday and doing whatever honey does she wants me to do. What about you?
That sounds like fun, antennas and drones. Nothing planned. Nope. If I get the energy, I got a PT tomorrow, so in the morning, so I imagine I'll be wiped out all day. But if I get the energy, I'm going to wander on down to the lake and do a little fishing.
Right on. Well, I've rest up and get some lines wet. I haven't gone fishing in a long time. That sounds actually pretty damn fun.
Yeah, usually this lake that we're on here, or just down the street there, as soon as the ice goes, big crappies come in. We hit some ball.
Back before kids, man, that's all I would do. I would go kayak fishing, but time is of the essence now, and it's hard because you can't bring little kids on a kayak, but I think we'll get back to it at some point. Thought about buying a boat, but then I keep hearing people talk about how much boats suck and how expensive they are, so kind of decided otherwise.
I can't imagine fishing on a kayak there. I fished out of a canoe for a while, and one real cold November before the lakes froze up in the Lapeer State Game Area, I was out there by myself, and I caught a nice big rainbow, and it was flopping all over the place, and I was jumping around trying to grab it, and I almost dunked myself and lost, I don't know, must have been $1,000 worth of tackle kind of thing. And I said, well, that's it for me. No more fishing out of canoes.
You know, I feel like canoes are more sketchy than a kayak. The kayaks I used to fish off of, they were, what do they call them? Sit on tops, like you didn't sit in them. So it was basically like a giant paddleboard, but you had a little bit of a gunnel to keep you dry, and you had an elevated seat, but then they all had standing platforms. So you would stand and cast and fish, and it was actually really cool because if you got into some of the shallows and the pads, you could actually sight fish.
Yeah, and I did see canoes with some sort of a outrigger type of deal on there, but then that made it kind of difficult to fish on that side of the boat in case you got a decent one that was a little hard to control.
Yep, I've seen those, too. They make them for kayaks. So you can, like, oh, my God, what do they call them? Those tracks. I think there's a name for them. But tracks that are, like, universal, and you can put all your gear, different gear and attachments on them, they make them for those.
Excuse me. Boy, there was supposed to be ammo prices were hitting rock bottom sort of thing, is from what I'm seeing on YouTube there. And Sean was looking at some getting some 30-06 ammo there, and I started looking around. And holy cow, man! The prices don't seem any cheaper than they ever were to me.
I'm convinced it's everything, man. I was looking at drone components today, and a drone that I would have been able to build 2 or 3 years ago that would have cost like $300 is almost $500 now, and it's just like I don't know if it's the tariffs, if it's just the I'm sure it's got to be the tariffs or the shortage of components because of the tariffs. But it's just like, man, these, you know, for example, a flight controller, an ESC, you used to be able to pick them up for like $80 or $140 now. It's just everything's so expensive.
Not the tariffs.
The kind of thing's been going on, and it was always blamed on inflation. I think they should just call it what it is, greed.
Well, I've never seen prices come down after they've gone up.
Yeah, ammo shortage there, what was it, 2020 or 2021, something like that. I kind of think that was an engineered thing, because from what I heard, there was a most of the ammo manufacturers had semis. Their parking lots were filled with semis full of ammo, and they were just waiting for the prices to hit a certain level before they turned them loose kind of thing. And then a while after, things got back to normal, prices started going down, but they didn't go down to what they originally were. I used to be able to get 1,000 primers, gold medal match primers, for $29. Now it's probably anywhere from $70, $80 to $130, depending on where you get it.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I haven't bought ammo in a long time. I stocked up a while back and kind of just been sitting on it, which sucks because I like shooting, but not for what it costs to shoot and have fun now. I remember when I used to go to Walmart, I could get 1,000 rounds of 9mm for like $230, and I don't even know if I can buy 1,000 rounds at a time anymore.
9mm? You mean people are still using that?
I think that's the problem, is everyone's buying it.
Yep, I just had to be a wise guy. That's what 9mm is probably one of the most popular calibers that there is, and that's the trouble whenever there's a little shortage starting, or it seems to me like there's some of the gun gurus there on YouTube are almost trying to cut the shortage, because they keep saying, oh, it's coming this year, it's, you know, stock up kind of thing, and I don't see anything coming, and they're claiming that the ammo prices are rock bottom right now, and man, when I went and looked at stuff online there, it didn't seem like rock bottom to me, but yeah, and anyway, that's the way to do it, though. Stack up on, and get, you know, I think you know that already, the same lot number. That way you don't got to keep, like for long range shooting, you don't got to keep redoing your elevations every time you get a different lot.
I stopped putting a lot of faith in the YouTube community for the gun stuff because I'm pretty sure that 90% of them are shills and they're just regurgitating what they're paid to say.
Yeah, that's what I've been thinking lately, all this ammo shortage and bull getting out and low prices and all that stuff. I thought, you know, I wonder if these guys are hooked up with, you know, they got money invested in some of these ammo manufacturers because they seem to be trying to create something here.
It's hard to know what to believe anymore, and like you did, you kind of got to go find out for yourself because, fortunately, we have a baseline of what things should cost and what they did cost, not what people say they should cost.
Yeah, right, and like you, I stacked up on powder and primers and bullets and brass and all that good stuff kind of thing, but every now and then I consider a new caliber, and then I think, oh, geez, then I got to buy dyes, and then I got to get brass, and you know, I got to get all this stuff all over again. I'll just stick with what I got.
I just had this conversation with a buddy of mine about reloading 410 and saving our holes. We're just enamored with that little round. We've been turkey hunting with it. Now we're like, okay, what's next? Rabbits, ducks, you know, geese, depending on if you're shooting exotics. So we've been big fans of it. We're like, well, what if we start reloading? He goes, it's going to cost me like $500 just to get the reloading set up.
Oh, I don't know. I was just looking at some cheaper, the Mech Junior type of thing. It's not that expensive. But I do, you know, you asked me about that hand cannon there kind of thing. What was it? That was a 10-inch vent rib 410. And I started looking at the price. I had like 6 boxes around here somewhere. And anyway, I started looking at the prices now lately for 410. I just couldn't believe it, man. I was considering I had a Mech Junior a long time ago, and in one of my many moves, I don't know, I left it somewhere apparently. I think it'd be worthwhile if you guys are going to shoot a lot of 410s. I tried using that 10-inch 410 there for partridge hunting up north, and I don't know how many birds I had go up right in front of me going straight away at less than 10 yards, and I know I shot right on them, but they never flinched. They just kept right on it going. So I use it for close range dispatcher.
Up until about 2 years ago, that's all I thought a 410 was good for, was a little rat blaster, but I've been proven wrong time and time again by them. They're pretty incredible. But 410's ridiculous. I think the last non-exotic box I bought, it was just Remington, might be 6-shot, maybe 7, just like game loads for like small game. It was $22 for 20, and then my exotics I shoot, they come in a 5-pack. A 5-pack is $20, so, you know, it gets expensive. No, I'm sorry, it's more than that. I think I was paying, I might have been paying $50 for 5 rounds of number 9 tungsten.
Holy crap, Batman. That's incredible. My grandfather had a real nice double barrel 410. I kind of wish I'd have got a hold of that. Anyway, that short little 10-inch barrel of mine, it's just it's just a toy, really, but it's kind of fun.
So, anyway, back to the reloading. So he's got the whole setup to reload 12-gauge from when he used to shoot sporting clays all the time. How much do you think it would cost to get the right guys and whatever the hell else he needs to reload 410? Was he accurate saying it's going to be about $500 if he's already got the press and the scales and all that?
Oh, okay. If he's already got a 12 gauge set up, and depending on what it is, it could cost it. I think he'd be way better off just getting a Mech Junior or one of the cheaper Mechs. I think for $125, $150, you're up and running. You know, other than buying wads and primers and shot, you're not going to crank out, hundreds of rounds in an hour kind of thing. You're going to go one at a time, but it's still a whole lot cheaper.
Well, if we're shooting single-shot 410s, I don't think we need that much ammo, but we're talking about cleaning house on some possums, raccoons, and squirrels that he's got on his farm. But we're just sick of paying the premium that, I mean, I bought that box of game loads 2 years ago, so I can only imagine what it costs now, I'll have to price that out. Send me a link if you don't mind. I might even buy one. Screw it. I'll just reload my own 410.
Yeah, I'll try to remember where in the heck I was just looking at him. It's a couple of days back. I was out checking him out, but I can't remember who it was. But, same thing with the center fire stuff. I've always done it on a single-stage press kind of thing, you know, and so I'd work, during the week, my evenings during the week, I'd load through the week kind of thing to shoot on the weekend. And then I broke down and bought a Dillon XL650, a progressive press. Man, you could crank the rounds out with that thing. That was a lot of fun. But then I got in some medical trouble and needed to pay some bills, so I ended up selling it. So I'm back to the single-stage press deal. But it's different. You don't have a whole lot of time. I got a lot of time, so I can spend the evenings most of the week kind of thing, just cranking out a few rounds here and a few rounds there, a couple hundred rounds for the weekend kind of thing.
Hey, DBF, I don't think I would mind a single stage for as much as I shoot. Like I said, I'm not getting into load development or anything like that where I got to go get a bunch of data. I'm putting couple BBs in a shot shell for some squirrels. So as long as they go bang and they go flying, I'm good.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. If you're just, blasting some varmints on the weekend kind of thing, you could probably do a box of 20 in one evening, you know, kind of thing, and not have to spend the whole week doing that kind of stuff. But I'll see if I can find that and send it to you.
That might be the gateway drug right there. I start loading 410 and I get hooked.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
The first thing I need to do, though, is I need to get a new 410. I'm shooting a Rossi Tuffy Turkey. So that thing's it's a polymer frame, polymer stock, and I don't think it'll ever be an issue, but just something tells me that I shouldn't be shooting it for fun. I get the dedicated turkey gun. It's got a red dot on it and everything, so it's not meant to be shot for fun. But Stevenson makes it's a 300 stump model for like $200, all steel. You can get a thumb hole, like super nice gun. I might pick up one of those if I start doing this, and that'll be my farming gun. And believe it or not, I've never shot a groundhog with a shotgun.
Well, I believe it. It seemed like it'd be hard in that open country there. It seemed like it'd be kind of hard to get it close enough. We have one in the backyard here. He's got a hole underneath the deck going alongside the basement wall there. I wanted to send him to his maker for a long time, but it's a felony around here, and my sister kind of likes the darn thing.
Hearing you got groundhogs in the yard makes me miss my air gun.
Yeah, there you go. I I went out and got a semi-auto BB pistol there, CO2. The lowest power I could find, the slowest one I could find was 480 feet per second. I thought maybe I could sting him in the rear end a few times and convince him to move on to somebody else's yard.
Yeah, they're stubborn little things. They don't. They like to dig in and hang out. I've had a hard time. Typically, they get to the point where they're just agitated enough that they don't have any interest in dealing with me when they see me pull up and they're just in their burrows. So I never even get a shot at them. But I've talked to a couple farmers who have tried to persuade them to leave, you know, the ethical way and not kill them, and it never works.
Yeah, two of the neighbors across the street there, they got, I see two different trapper trucks coming out there and carrying traps out there, you know, cages out there and setting them in the backyard kind of thing. And you know what happens then when they catch them kind of thing. They have them great big garbage cans at home full of water. And what a terrible way to go. I don't know. But it ain't risking. It ain't worth risking a felony.
No, definitely not. I had a guy out here contact me. He wanted me to do the same thing. He wanted me to trap them because I don't want you shooting him. I want you to trap him. Like, okay, well, I'm not doing that, dude. Sorry, find someone else. Like, I'm either going to shoot him and I'll transport him off the property, or you can figure it out, because traps cost a lot of money and take a lot of time, and I have no interest in dealing with that. The last time I dispatched something in a trap, it was two raccoons at once, and I had my .22 pistol suppressed. And I hit one of the grates, and it fragmented the bullet. I caught shrapnel in my leg, and I was like, I'm never dealing with this again. This is just stupid.
Do you know where the propane place is on Van Dyke there, just north of Elmont? And right behind them, there's a little dead-end gravel street and a little shop back there. I used to work at that shop, doing a lot of their drawings and design work for them kind of thing, induction heat. And I used to see a guy, that's what he was doing, was trapping them. He'd bring them over to our little dead-end street there, and I'd take a look out the window every once in a while, and I'd see him letting them go out there. Man, we had that neighborhood around there on the next street over kind of thing. They had them pour them groundhogs all over the place, and then they started hanging around, digging holes around the shop, and the shop owner wanted me to start shooting them. I don't get me involved in this.
Yeah, they don't get the damage that they can do by doing that kind of stuff and then making it someone else's problem. But then again, a lot of people just don't care. The only things that I've relocated that get a pass are possums, because I just feel bad killing them. Anything, in my opinion, anything that I can walk up to and pick up, I probably shouldn't be shooting because it's that dumb.
Well, I just, I'm not real crazy about the skunks. We've had a couple of skunks around here. They drive me crazy, and I went after one in the backyard there with him one time. And to my amazement there, we had a little standoff going on there. I figured he'd take off running, but he didn't. He was standing his ground and starting to move up on me kind of thing, and I was like, what? You got to be kidding me. So I grabbed this broom, and I went out there and just started whacking the heck out of him. Drove him back to the to the weeds on this little hill kind of thing, and then when he hit that, he figured out he didn't have clear grass to go on anymore. Then he turned around, threw the tail up, and I knew what was coming, so I held the broom up by his rear end there, and he squirted the broom, but not me. But he hasn't been back ever since.
Good, you scared him off and didn't get skunked. We at the old house, we had two of them, and I thought we only had one, so I put the live trap out and caught it like the first night. I used what did I use? I think I just used dog. Yeah, it was dog food. And getting ready to leave for work the next morning, oh, crap, like, there's a skunk right there. So luckily, he went and had the air rifle. And I didn't think this through because I was catching him on camera, and he was walking right on the sidewalk, right up to the front door, basically. So I put the trap there, didn't really think anything of it. I catch this thing. I'm like, great, now what? I can't walk up to it and pick it up because it's going to spray me. And now I got to shoot towards my house. So I pulled out the air rifle. This is like 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm standing on the sidewalk and looking at this, shooting at my house with a red light. And perfect shot, didn't spray, thought I was done, all good. I'm like, all right, I'll put the trap out one more night just to be safe. Sure thing, next day I catch another one, rinse and repeat. I go to do the same thing. This one sprays, and my God, I bet you to this day, that concrete, when it rains, still smells like skunk. The amount of disgustingness that came out of that thing, I mean, I couldn't breathe. I was choking. It was so bad. And I must not have hit him in the right spot. And it just, I'll never forget that smell. I do not like skunks.
Bummer. So I'm kind of curious here. How long did you have to use the back door instead of the front door?
Oh, it was like that for at least a month, where it was just a pungent odor every time you walked by the house. And my truck was, I don't know, 15 yards away in the driveway, maybe 10 yards, and the inside of the truck smelled for a long time. Not, like, potent, pungent, but, like, you got in and it smelled like skunk.
Yes, sir, that's some nasty stuff. I used to see quite a few of them around here. Now that we're talking about it, I haven't seen one live or dead smacked in the road in quite a while.
That's a good thing. I can do without them. They're cute little critters. They ain't going to do their thing in the woods, but at the time I had 2 young kids and I had a dog that went out, and they were in my backyard in the fenced-in area, so I was like, nuh-uh, I am not dealing with a dog that gets sprayed.
You got any porcupines out in your neck of the woods?
Nope. I only had one encounter with one, and it was up in Big Rapids.
Yeah, my time around, it was a still country kind of thing. I don't ever remember seeing one, but I'd go up to my buddies up there up north around Kalkaska and some of the state land out there. Man, they were all over the place. And he had 2 nice bird dogs we were always running around with. So they were one of them was, I don't know, 10 yards in front of us when we kind of spooked it out of a bunch of weeds and stuff. And luckily the guy shot it before the dogs got to it.
Yeah, they're on the nuisance list. Like, they're shoot on sight, kind of.
I got that impression because that's exactly what he did. Especially, I know the dog owners there. The dog owners are a shoot on sight kind of thing. And I was kind of surprised. I expected dogs to run up to the dead porky and start biting and sniffing, but luckily that didn't happen.
Yeah, I've only seen one, and I've shot one, and I don't know, it was like a knee-jerk reaction, but my buddy and I were up on federal land up in Big Rapids somewhere, and I don't know why, we were walking in the woods, and it kind of did the same thing. It just came out of nowhere, and I had a Glock on, and that's all I had. Yeah, that's what the poor guy got.
Yeah, I was up north there partridge hunting one time, and I happened to see this big blob in a tree kind of thing over there, and sure enough, there was one sleeping up in a tree, but all I had was a shotgun, and he was probably 70, 80 yards away. And I thought, well, it just don't seem to be worth the trouble.
It must be the habitat, though. It's the only thing I can think of why we don't have them down here.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've got the same... Basically, it seems like the same kind of woods as they got up north, so I don't really know what that was all about. But I remember quite a few years back in the thumb there, somebody saw and photographed a wolverine. One single wolverine. It wasn't a family. I mean, it was one single wolverine. Just all of a sudden, it's supposed to be the wolverine state. And we haven't had any wolverines in, hundreds of years kind of thing, 100 years or more. And then all of a sudden, one shows up in the thumb. Everybody couldn't figure out how it got there.
That's one animal I've not had a run-in with either, and I'm not mad about it. Excuse me. I feel like didn't we end up trapping them out of Michigan, basically, for their eyes?
Yeah, I think so. Plus, they were just mean little critters. I mean, Alaska, Canada, where they still got them, They don't put up with no crap, not even from big brown bears and grizzly bears. They'll take those on. Yeah, they got a really bad temperament and some nasty claws and fangs, too. So I think that had a little played a little part in it, too.
So the guys that used to watch Kyle hunting videos of on YouTube, I've seen them snag a couple because they just respond to the call. And, yeah, I wouldn't want to get too close to them.
Yeah, when I was in Alaska there for 1980 for a few months and wandered around in the woods quite a bit, and I was more worried about running into one of them than I was the bears or the moose.
You know, if it came down to it and I had to choose, I think I would rather run into a bear than a moose any day of the week.
I had one looking for me in Alaska, a young bull. I was going down to the creek down below this my buddy's brother's house, Willow Creek, and there was an island in the they call it a creek. It was a full-blown river, but anyway, the moose was on the other side of the island, and I was working my way in the middle of the river kind of thing, and so I got up on the rock, and then the moose came around the other side of the island. I cast up and watch the line go down kind of thing. Boom, there's this moose right there. Holy cow. Well, I'm just tickled to death, you know, kind of thing. And then he got up on the shore and he walked up right over beside me. He was only 15 yards away, 10, 15 yards away. then it wasn't so cool anymore. He stood there eating kind of thing, and then the wind shifted and put my scent to him, and he went bananas, man. He just started grunting stuff, slamming the ground and looking all over the place and running back and forth and slamming the ground. And I ended up standing on that rock for about 25 minutes, I think, 25 to 30 minutes before he finally got nervous because he knew I was there, but he couldn't find me.
Yeah, that's what I've seen every encounter and every story I've read. They're just not they're not giant horses with antlers. They're mean, and they're going to run over you and anything that's between you get to you.
My buddy's older brother had a Piper Super Cub, and him and my friend were going off to a little lake somewhere to do some fishing. It was only a two-seater, so I had to stay behind. Anyway, he took off from the little lake that was right there where their house was kind of thing. And all of a sudden, he banked real hard, and he come back around and said, man, there's a big old grizzly on Pisa's trail. And I took off running. I really wanted to see this grizzly. And I started running down this little trail, and it was so thick you couldn't see 5 feet on either side of the trail. And I'm running up this blind hill, and it suddenly hit me, what are you doing? So I ran back to the cabin and got my buddy's 338 Winchester, and I went out there. But anyway, I'm going to break for time. Anyway, I went back out there with the rifle, and I could see the plane circling around. He was following the bear, so he was quite down. Anyway, I ended up wandering on down, and I ran out into a spot where I couldn't go any further. There was lakes on both sides and a bunch of water and stuff. And all of a sudden, I heard some noises. Moose were flying out of this little swampy area, cows with calves, one going the other way, and then one cow came out with a calf, started running right toward me, and I'm like, oh, my God. I'm going to have to shoot that thing, and the calf's going to be, you know, whatever. And all of a sudden, I got real, you know how your hair just stands up all over, and I turned around looking, there's this big bull standing about, I don't know, 20 yards behind me, just standing there,
No, thanks. Yeah, that's some real frontier out there where there's actually game animals, and all of them are large and want to kill you. Give me a day here, Rick. I'm almost home. I got a call coming in, so I might not catch up. But if I don't, I'm sure I'll talk to you this weekend. N8DBF.
Okay, bud. Take care. Catch you later. K8WOJ.
Hey, you beat one. This is Kilo Foxtrot 8, Echo Tango, Quebec. Anyone on Statewide 1?
Why, hello there.
Is that you, John?
Yes, sir. How's Darren doing today?
I'm doing okay. I was measuring earlier today the current draw of my radio when it was in transmit mode at 40 watts.
Do you say at 4 watts or 40 watts?
40. The larger of the two.
Nice. Does that coincide with what your radio was set to? I assume your measurement was 40 watts. What was the advertised or the setting at?
The 40, the transmit was realistically probably transmitting 37, I think. I do not necessarily know for certain because I did not have the power meter hooked up in line, at least the RF power meter hooked up in line. I had the AC-DC power meter hooked up in line on that side to see that it was pulling about 100 watts from the battery, so that's whatever. 8 amps at about 12 volts, I think it was. Are you still there, John?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I did not hear the end of that sentence.
I was just saying it was sounds like it was roughly what you would be expecting to hear.
Yeah, that sounds about right. The power draw on the battery side was a little bit higher than I was expecting. I thought it would be closer to 80, if not a little bit below 80, because the efficiency factor I thought was about 2 in terms of you pull 2 watts to put out 1 watt on the air.
Gotcha, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Last heard, and I'm barely getting in. So one of the last ones, it looks like it went all wrong.
How are you doing? Do you have any nets this weekend that you're going to be operating?
I have no nets that I'll be operating. I think that's what you said. But I am going to be working on some SkyOne stuff, trying to get that up onto the website this weekend. Because that's kind of one of the last main hurdles. And then I'll be game to play and get back into ham radio and learn stuff. So I'm pretty excited to get that out of the way. Been watching some YouTube videos, getting some ideas of things to play with. So hopefully I'm still getting in good enough that you can hear me.
I can still hear you over here.
Gotcha. Well, what about you? You got any plans for this weekend? Anything fun?
My only plans is really hang out with my grandmother over the weekend and my mother, and then maybe possibly look at the firewall of my car and try to figure out how I may or may not be able to pass voltage from the engine compartment side to the passenger side.
Gotcha. Okay. And whatnot for my Ford E250. My new car has got that all built in already. It's got a fuse panel that I can access in the back that I can add things to pretty easily. So I get lucky in that regard. But I think there's different ways to do that.
The way that I heard to do it is to just take a look at the wall on the firewall and see where there's a rubber grommet and just, if there is space in there, just fit your wires through next to it. If not, maybe poke a hole in the rubber grommet as opposed to drilling your own hole in the metal, because that needs to be structural.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea, a good advice. Yeah, that's basically what they tell you to look for is rubber grommets or, something to that nature that you can just pop out, put a hole in, remove, that type of thing. So sounds like a worthy endeavor. It sounds like you're working on putting a more permanent high-power
solution in the car, which as you learned in the set, that will be helpful.
I don't know if you caught that, but during the set, I was using my TYT MD9600, and for a while there, I was trying to join the UHF side from, from the Air Force Base, and I was transmitting about 40 watts, supposedly. I do not necessarily know for certain that it was actually 40 watts, because the SWR on the antenna was kind of crap, but yeah. I'm learning all the same.
Yeah, that's right. You were pushing 40 watts, but still struggling to get in, and we were all confused as to what that would, where all your power was going. So maybe I missed it, but did you ever figure that out?
No, sir. I put it on the bench over here, and I noticed that it was transmitting 37 watts on UHF and probably similar on VHF roughly, but I don't necessarily know exactly how that equates to why the signal was just not getting there. I know that it is roughly, I think it's like a logarithmic kind of in terms of how your power goes outwards. Maybe it's something else, maybe it's a squaring or something like that, but regardless, the further and further distance you go out, the more times you'll need to push up the power by a factor of two. And it's not necessarily like you're 10 miles out, then at 20 miles you need twice the power. It's not that at all.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. That was a little confusing as to why you know, We all thought you should have been getting in better. So it is curious. Well, hopefully you get that figured out, and hopefully whatever changes you're making to your rig. Oh yeah, you know, that is true, as your antenna was the ZMB2, which is kind of a rubber duck of sorts for an HT. But it was on a mag mount, and so I think that if you had a slightly different, mag mount that had a slightly better antenna than that little thin wire, I'll bet you would do quite a bit better. Did you get a new magnet mount since then?
Yes, I ordered the link off of the Discord page where it was linking to Amazon. I just selected that, and that worked well enough from what I could see. At least on my minimal testing, it has better SWR as opposed to the, I think it is, almost 2. When I was doing my testing, it was the new radio antenna is more closer to 1.2, so it should be a lot better on the SWR side.
Yeah, it sounds like that'll make a heck of a difference. So yeah, well, that's great. So sweet. I'm setting up I got a dog sit this weekend, and I'm setting up a little I got like dog sit and house sit, which is kind of perfect. Cuz I get to watch this dog, and then I get to set up like a little mobile command station here. And I'm going to try to run off of all backup batteries and see how well I do and for how long. Might break the Starlink out. And there's actually a pretty big backyard here. I don't know what you're doing this weekend, but it'd be a pretty decent spot to run some HF antennas if you're itching for it.
Undoubtedly, I want to run an HF antenna, but I don't necessarily know if hanging out at your friend's place or whoever that you're dog-sitting or house-sitting, it's necessarily the best idea to invite people over when you're house-sitting their house. Anywho, though, yeah, I want to get my 40-meter vertical out and see how well it actually performs, because I think it should perform okay, and then eventually I think I'm going to want to try to make a 60-meter loading coil for 80-meter loading coil for it, which I rendered up in CAD, and it looks like he's going to be absolutely enormous. If I do it at the 10-gauge wire at the bottom that I was maybe thinking about doing, maybe that's not the best idea in the world. Maybe I should actually go to a thinner gauge. I don't exactly know RF transmit power and what would be an ideal volt or ideal to be using for that.
Gotcha. Well, so I'm dog sitting / house sitting for my aunt, and I know she would be fine with it. So, we would probably spend most of the time outside in the backyard near the antennas anyway. So, I'm not real worried about it, but it sounds like, you know, if you wanted, you know, invitation's open. But it sounds like you got other big plans for this weekend and got some things you got to work out. And so I know you've been kind of itching to play with some HF. So I figured I'd throw it out there since I'm kind of sitting around this weekend.
Yeah, thanks for the offer. At work recently, I was trying to just see if I could experiment with CAD, and I designed a loading coil on paper for a 40 to 80 meter conversion for a vertical one that's a bottom loading coil style, which is the only way I've really seen loading coils go for verticals. And the loading coil on the bottom, it looks like, at least in terms of on the simulation, it looks like it's going to be about a foot tall if I stick with the 10 gauge. What gauge wire do you think I should be using if I'm going to only be pushing maybe at best 100 watts?
You know, you got me. I'm not probably the right person to ask, mostly because when I am in that position, I will probably Google it and try to find out what other people are suggesting, what other people have done. And I don't think, you know, I have, you've seen my Bushcom middle two antenna, and that thing, you know, was kind of expensive. That has pretty small gauge wire, and I think it's rated to at least 100 watts. So I think you could get away with something rather small. I think when it comes to digital, you want to go thicker. I'm not 100% sure why that is, but it seems like when dealing with digital modes, you usually lower the power of your radio because that's harder on it, and then you usually need a thicker antenna. But I'm naive to it. You know, this is the blind leading the blind, so I would Google it and to see what you can find there, but I, you know, I am able to kind of mentally reference my HF antenna that's 100 watts and it's pretty small. But if you're dealing with VHF, UHF, I'm kind of a little bit multitasking here, and you want to push 100 watts, I would go with something quite a bit thicker. Probably RG8 would be fine, or RG8X I think is ideal. You know, when it comes to like a building or, you know, a more permanent mount, you know, you really go thick. So it kind of depends on, you know, where you plan to hide the wires in your car and, you know, all stuff. I might be going beyond your scope or kind of leaving your scope.
Yeah, for the HF loading coil, that was intended for not necessarily my car, but just to convert the 40-meter antenna that I have, which is a 40-meter quarter wave, which is too tall to set up in my front yard, as you can probably imagine. It needs guide wires and all that fun. I'm trying to figure out how to do that. A quick Google search kind of says that it's somewhere in the neighborhood of between 16 and 22. 22 is the small gauge wire that I have at home that I've used for my wire antenna. And that works just fine at the 10 watts. I think that I maybe pushed through it once. But you mentioned about UHF, VHF also, and I was looking at power amplifier kits online, and I found a cool one for UHF that can apparently push out 1 kilowatt. So, yeah, that's quite a bit more dangerous, pushing out 1 kilowatt of UHF, VHF in comparison to the HF spectrum usually.
Yeah, that's sort of sketchy sounding. most power amplifiers are pretty expensive, especially when you get into that range for I don't know. I don't know how much I would trust something like that, but it sounds neat. But you're really getting into some dangerous territory with that kind of power. And I'd imagine even to the point where you probably need to use something other than 120 volts to power it. But
so you said that you might need something more than the 120 volts AC. Maybe you might be correct on that. I don't necessarily know for certain. In terms of DC power, you need around 50 volts. I think it might be closer to 54 volts, and you're pulling all that amperage, which is just crazy. So that's a restriction, and then also, though, to do that in terms of battery capacity, that is not that bad to do it with a lithium polymer. But again, you're talking about a $200 to $300 worth of raw battery cells. And the transistor that gets used in that kind of a kit in and of itself costs somewhere between $100 and $200. So, yeah, it's quite expensive to get into that 1 kilowatt transmit power over UHF or VHF.
You know, it's kind of curious. All these, I think, you know, it's getting like a boom or something that you can work on. Just making sure I'm looking in. I had to tell the dog to cool it.
Yeah, John, you're right. The 1 kilowatt is a heck of a lot more than what you probably realistically would want to be using, especially like in a house environment or something like that. And yeah, there is a solution to just putting the antenna higher. I was just more curious in terms of, I just was looking online to try to see if I could find a kit to build for UHF, VHF linear power amplifier, and that's about the only one that I managed to find online. The younger sibling of it is 500 watts, which is, again, still the same point of insanity, just about lesser, so, but whatever. I, in reality, would only want to go up to 100 watts maybe on UHF, VHF, and on HF, whatever. You can push a kilowatt just fine. That's not that bad, especially when you have a long dipole antenna.
Yeah, I like that. I like what you said there.
Hey, John, you're breaking up real bad. I'll talk to you later. You can send me a message over Discord if you wanted to continue the conversation. I'd be willing to continue the conversation, that's for certain. Talk to you later. 73 Kilo Fox Friday Echo Tango Quebec. Out. Well, monitoring, I guess.
The actions I've had out of the country, and then you know, pretty reliably hitting Florida or California, you know, pretty much the whole United States. And how, you know, trying to get comfortable.
Hey, John there. I don't know if you're hearing me or not, but you were making it up to the repeater very, very poorly, and I could hear maybe a word or two and a good wait between words before I could hear another word. So, yeah, we can continue the conversation on Discord, I guess. Kilo Foxtrot 8 Echo Tango Quebec.
All right, have a good one. K-E-A-W-U-O.
W-A-R-I-T. K-C-A-W-R-T.
K-A-B-C-W, Harbor Springs.